Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
And hello.
Unfortunately for him, according to a little pre-podcast chatter, Brian Brushwood.
Yes, it is unfortunate that I have to spend time with two of my best friends in the universe. Hello, beautiful people.
Nothing's off limits. Nothing. Yeah. Brian was on the phone. He goes, hey, unfortunately, I have to start this podcast. He didn't know he walked into the room and the stream was live. And I heard him. I heard him say everything.
which is awkward. That was actually for I'm going to do a TEDx up in Hartford, Connecticut in a couple of weeks. And so the organizer, of course, you know, being responsible, wants to know, quote unquote, what I'm going to talk about. What? And it's like, I'm like, man, that's like a next week problem.
Exactly. boy, oh boy, what an exciting week. If you saw the eclipse.
Little bit. Hey, Justin, you don't mind if me and Andrew kind of just geek out about the eclipse that we definitely saw to totality? Wait, did you? You were going to go to Portland, right?
I was going to go to Portland. I didn't wind up going to Portland. So I, instead of having a scene out there on the beaches of Oregon, where there was a full totality for the, you know, minute and 30 seconds or whatever it was. Instead, had my lonely roof in Oakland, where full cloud cover prevented me from even seeing the sun, let alone the eclipse that followed.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I remember we watched a film, and it was kind of sad because we actually saw this in Oregon, and it felt more real than it should have. But it's about these children who lived on this planet where the sun, like, never came out, maybe only once a year.
That's the Ray Bradbury story, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
And, like, I think it was theoretically set on Venus with all the cloud cover.
Yeah, it's why the children caught on fire and melted. they lock some kid in the closet, and he doesn't get to see the eclipse.
I saw that when I was in second grade. There was a short movie made about that, and it broke my heart. Even at second grade, I understood what a grave injustice had been done.
Yeah, let's find out the name of it. And I mean, I would hate to be that kid. I'd hate to be that kid.
Well, the only thing worse than being that kid is being that kid and joining two other kids live in public and having the other two just talk about how great it was seeing the sun the one time.
Well, specifically when we delayed the podcast because we were all going to be gone for the eclipse. And then we had it on Wednesday and Andrew was coming back from his big trip that we're going to hear all about. And Andrew was like, oh, I can't make it. And so instead of doing the show Wednesday, which is Brian and I, Brian's like, well, I assume the entire show is going to be of us talking about the eclipse. So let's move the show back another couple days so we can just talk about the eclipse as opposed to just kind of getting through the
moving
eclipse.
Moving beyond.
Whatever, half of the eclipse stories. No. Let's make sure we have our own totality.
Yeah. It's J.C. Calhoun.
All Summer and a Day, by the way. That's the name of the story. Yeah.
Okay. So I did not know that you had made plans, Andrew, to, and number one, certainly I didn't know that you were planning to hop in a car and drive north till you could see the eclipse, but I
funny
definitely
thing, Brian,
didn't know.
I didn't know that either until Saturday, 4 p.m.
Okay, yeah, much less your illustrious team members as you went.
Yeah, so I wanted to go, and I put out a kind of a little feeler out on Facebook like a week before to see if anybody was into it. And kind of got kind of, you know, part of the problem using a fake name on Facebook, people don't always go, oh, hey, I know who's asking. But anyhow, I was like, man, do I want to go? Do I not go? And I'm like, and as the eclipse was approaching, and I will tell you the phrase that got me, the power of marketing, the phrase that got me, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to miss this, was when they called it the Great American Eclipse.
What does that mean? What's the joke there?
It sounded awesome. Why would I want to miss out on that?
Oh, okay. I thought you were dismissing it. I didn't realize you were.
Opposite. I heard it called the Great American Eclipse, and I'm like, ooh, this is good, goes coast to coast. And I'd been trying. I had a friend whose buddy owned a private jet and was, you know, kind of like, who wants to go make the case for getting on it? And I lost out to like an astronomer, but a radio astronomer, which I'm like, you tell them what happened a million years later, who cares?
You hear anyhow, that, radio astronomers? Pa-pow. Shots fired.
Yeah, insane, you know, like, oh, look, here's the spreadsheet. Oh, wow, it's exciting. It's thrilling. You know, look at that decimal point. Ooh.
They're not inhuman robots, man.
I'm just dismissing one of the most important fields of science ever.
Right.
But anyhow, I was like, I'm like, all right, but maybe I'm going to go. And I'm looking yeah, it's like 12 hours, 13 hours from here. I could go to Oregon and watch eclipse with a bunch of hippies. And I'm like, well, it's the same distance to go to like Idaho. So I put out like last minute, like on Facebook, like literally like Saturday afternoon, like, hey, you know, still thinking about going all the way to, you know, driving to go see the eclipse. And then our buddy, Rudy Kobe, coolest magician on earth, Rudy Kobe, who brought us all out to the Magic Castle several years ago when we took it over and had fun with it. Rudy Kobe says, I would love to go, man. And I realized Vegas is on the way to Idaho.
Oh, nice. So you swooped into Vegas to pick him up and then just two bros broing.
Yeah, picked him up in Vegas. We drove up. We stopped somewhere in the middle of Utah. Saturday night, because I'd been on the road, ate at an awesome Perkins with super sweet girls there that were there, and got back on the road. We stopped by then Salt Lake City. We went to the Mormon visitor center, the temple and all that. Everybody was really cool. Rudy's like, I would never normally go here. I'm like, dude, trust me, it's great. Everybody's like, they're really cool. Like, you can ask them questions about everything. They'll show you movies about stuff that's obviously from a certain point of view, perhaps.
Sure,
maybe
sure, sure.
Certain details.
You mean from a polite?
It's produced by the church, right? Like they're not any exposés.
Yeah, they talk like Joseph Smith's wife, you know. But everybody was there. Everybody was really cool, though. It's a nice thing. It's an amazing, amazing, you know, tour to go do. And you walk in there in shorts and a t-shirt, and you couldn't be more welcomed. So we went to Salt Lake City, and then we hopped on the road, drove to Idaho. We go to like, I forget where, Burley, like the town of Burley, you know, Burley. And like, they're literally, we get to the hotel there and we can smell the manure because there's a big field in back. I mean, you're like, this is, we're not bitching because like, this is what we signed up for, you know? So yeah. If you've never seen Rudy Kobe, you need to understand, you got to look at his hair. His hair is legendary. And understand that Rudy, besides having done his own TV specials for Fox around the world, touring, et cetera, Rudy was roommates with Marilyn Manson. And so Rudy's got this incredible,
Real quick timeout. Like, the two of you are positively ageless. I, as far as I'm concerned, you guys are 23 years old and will forever be so. You guys, there's something about your faces. How many children's souls do you eat to cause that to happen?
Well, it happens when you have the willingness to hop in a car at last minute notice to go do this. It's called the Peter Pan syndrome. So yes.
You have to live in the gimmick.
Live in the gimmick.
Yeah, we get there to Idaho. It's funny because at one point Rudy gets out of the we get to this hotel and there's like three guys who look like they're extras from Deliverance are sitting up on a balcony just looking at these weirdos. And Rudy walks out and he looks at the field and he goes, "This is adorable." I'm like, "We're locking the doors. We're barricading them tonight." So anyhow, we finally the next day we get up early at 5:30, which kind of if you know Rudy or myself. We don't exactly seem like people who would be like, get up at the crack of dawn to go do stuff. But coming from showbiz, you just get stuff done. So we hop into the car and we're like, where do we go? And Rudy was getting some updates about maybe go to Rexburg, Idaho, right? And Rexburg looks like a good enough spot. We go there and we get to – and traffic was light when we were getting there. So we get there and traffic's still light. We're at the base of it and we see that there's like this lot, this dirty lot with like where you could pay $25 to park your car there and watch it. I'm like, do we do this? And I look up and I notice this water tower way up on the hillside, this water tower and some electrical towers. I'm like, that's the highest spot. Let's just go there. So we hop in the car, we go up the hill, and we come to, it's basically a neighborhood, and there's a campus for Brigham Young University. And the campus, the college, has all of their parking lots have parking lot attendants who are like, you have to have permission to park here. And we're like, okay, but they go, you can park at this free lot right down the road. And it's another great spot. We parked there. There's only like two or three cars. We get there. There's porta potties. They put out porta potties. They had signs. They let us sit, you know, park for free. Super, super cool. I mean, like, Mormons have the best publicity outreach of any religion, if you ask my opinion, because everybody's super cool. You know, they all have great sense of humor. They've all traveled around, whatever. So, you know, I'm guessing I'm a non-believer, but, you know, these people have always just been, you know, we're super, super cool. So we park there and it's cold. And Rudy originally was in shorts and a t-shirt. And Rudy's like, man, I brought it as a joke, but I have to put on my lab man outfit.
Oh, that's amazing. In my mind, he was wearing it the entire time.
No.
As you guys are going through Chick-fil-A's.
Rudy has actually had a comic book series about him, comic books, et cetera, whatever. So there's this photo you're looking at right now, which is, imagine this traditional scientist, scientist coat, lab coat, all that, but all made of like black silk, black, with black goggles, everything in his hair, that just this amazing shark fin crest of a hairdo.
It looks aesthetically, if you're familiar with like the Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, you know, that kind of bigger than life comic book aesthetic.
And Rudy's 6'5", you know, so Rudy's already larger than life. So there's Rudy and I walking through Rexburg, Idaho. Everybody's super friendly. Some people might give us a funny look. I'd be like, hey, I'm Andrew. It's Rudy. He's from Las Vegas, obviously. You know, I'd say that. And we get big laughs. We walk around and people are sitting over by the LDS temple. People are sitting, you know, whatever the spots, people are starting to park from all across the country. And I'm like, well, let's go by the towers. We'll go up by these radio towers because maybe we can get good signal there. We walk up there, pass through a park. Everybody's super chill. And in back of it, there's this neighborhood. And then there's this wheat field going on forever. It's the most cinematic, amazing thing I'd ever seen. It's like, this is like where Superman would, like, you know, kick a field goal or something. So we do our broadcast from there. We walk along. We reach the edge of the neighborhood. Amazing, beautiful houses. And we're at an intersection of housing and then wheat field to the front and wheat field to the side. And the wheat field just goes off into the horizon. We talked to some people there who are really, really cool. I made friends with a basset hound that had her own 3D, her own eclipse glasses. And then we go further up the hill and find this awesome spot in the middle of the field. And we can see the mountains in the back. I think we're where the Rockies begin or what have you. We can see to the west. We can see everything. It's an amazing, amazing view. And then the eclipse.
So before we get to the eclipse, can I tell you a parallel story?
By the way, and we periscoped a ton of this. It was great because we had so many people joining us on Periscope.
Okay, real quick, I'm surprised that you had data coverage because like for me the oh you're shaking your head. You did not have data coverage.
No, I'd fantastic. I'd full LTE. Part of why I chose this spot is I look up and I saw the towers. So we chose the highest spot. We had towers. People were joking I was getting better signal there than I do here.
Yeah.
And just so you know, this spot, Rexburg, Idaho, PBS just put out a Nova documentary about the eclipse. They showed Rexburg. They showed probably 300 feet from where we were standing.
That's awesome.
Such an amazing spot.
So, okay. So full disclosure, like I originally 5 years ago, I think I saw on the calendar that the eclipse was coming and I full on just – I remember, you know, whenever you make any calendar item 5 years in advance, you feel a little bit ridiculous, you know, but I definitely just scorched out 5 days and it's like, this is holy territory. I will forever, you know, as I get closer, I'll figure it out. But as we got closer, there were friends of mine who were going to fly out to Nashville and book a hotel room and that stuff. And all of that felt like risky to me. Like as a showbiz type, Andrew, I'm sure you have experienced the same thing. It's like you understand flights get canceled and cloud cover happens and all this stuff. And so for me, the whole game was maximum number of options, maximum number of options. Like, I want to see this thing. I've never seen a full eclipse in my entire life. I wanted to make it happen. So for us, what we ended up doing was we booked a RV, which in my mind, and, you know, part of it is me gussying up, you know, to make it a fun adventure. But I decided that this would be our simulation of the zombie apocalypse, because I figured two things. First of all, everybody's going to be headed the same way in the same direction. Very few people are going to have pre-planned for all this. All of the, you know, the gas stations are going to be out of the sundry supplies that everybody needs. And nobody knows exactly where the eclipse is going to be best viewable. So we booked an RV and I loaded up me, Bonnie, all three daughters. We have a 4-year-old, 9-year-old and 13-year-old. And we went and did this orientation on the RV, and like halfway through the hour plus orientation on all this stuff, number one, I got a new sense of amazement for the technology that goes into an RV. They really are miniature spaceships. Unfortunately, it means you have to maintain them as if they're spaceships. Like, there's a lot of things to do. So we ended up heading north, and then one of our longtime listeners and fans of the show, Paul Freeland, I called out on, I think it was Night Attack, saying, "Hey, I would love it if we could go out and meet the our friends up in Nebraska." And he said, "Dude, full on, go stay with my dad. You know him because you performed at his college years ago. It'll be a lot of fun and great." So we headed that direction, all the while figuring contingency plans, like maybe we'll go somewhere else based on weather, which, by the way, for you, it was less of a problem, I would assume, Andrew, because you knew that all of the far west was pretty much wide open when it came to cloud cover, right?
It was beautiful. It was amazing.
So going to Nebraska, there were when you type weather in Nebraska or whatever, it'll tell you the chances of precipitation, but it won't necessarily talk about. I eventually figured out the secret code word is sky cover. Sky cover is the amount of the sky that is covered by clouds. So even as we're going north, we're seeing ruminations that maybe it's upwards of 30 to 50% sky cover. And it's like, oh man, I mean, can we handle just, you know, can we handle full on having the sun be behind a cloud during all this and all that? So we drive 8 hours a day, 2 days straight. And then, the second day, we get to Nick's place, and his house, Andrew, is heaven on earth. It is a slice of Americana. Like, the moment I showed up, I felt this deep, almost painful wave of nostalgia, because it's on a lake. It's got a beach and a pier. The water is fresh water that's greenish and just smells of childhood and all the things that are great in the world. The Freelands were unbelievably generous with their time, and they were very open to all of us. So we show up, the kids freak out, they jump in, they start swimming around. This is the night before the eclipse, and I'm still hedging my bets. I'm like, well, you know, we'll see what the weather is tomorrow, because one thing I know is we gotta see the eclipse. They end up taking us out on their pontoon boat. And I don't know, every so often when I think of Elon Musk saying that all this has to be a simulation, I kind of believe him, because every so often stuff lines up so well that you're like, there's no way this is real life.
A simulation for you, Brian. A simulation for the special chosen ones.
Exactly, right? So we end up, we hop on the lake, and being in the middle of Nebraska, we go on one of the best star tours I've ever been. We hop on the lake, we ride around, we look up. You can see, the stars are so bright that it's challenging to figure out what the constellations are. You know what I mean? Because all of the stars are so bright. You know, you see the Milky Way. It ended up, you know, we're at the tail end of the Perseids. So Penny sees like 7 or 8 shooting stars during this time.
Oh, wow.
The fish are jumping all around us. And we end up winding up the night. And the next morning I wake up. I go to bed, you know, spending maybe 2 hours, 2 full hours doing nothing but searching weather reports, learning about sky cover and like 30%. Is that a lot or a little? I don't know. And then I end up looking at like, what does 30% sky coverage look like? So I wake up the next morning and beautiful blue skies. Yeah, it's partly cloudy and so on. I know that there's a front coming. And it says 30% sky coverage. And I'm super worried about, like, what does that mean? Are we going to be hosed or not? Do we need to hop in the car and drive west on Interstate 80 and so on? And there's this moment that I realize I am obsessing about the possibility of bad weather. While meanwhile, outside, it is gorgeous. It is gorgeous and beautiful. And there's this moment that I just decide, We're going to roll the dice. Let's just play and swim. And if the sun happens to be behind a cloud, and this was the reason was I remember thinking worst case scenario, 7 years from now, the eclipse is over Austin. We will get to see the experience, but I'm going to roll the dice right now. Best decision I ever could have made. We ended up, in fact, I posted a couple of pictures of us, you know, the kids playing in the lake, us just waiting for everything. But the best part was how surreal things got as we got closer and closer to the eclipse. That all of your visual cues indicate that everything is normal. The sky's still blue. The shadows are still harsh. There's no clouds overhead. You're like, yeah, it's a normal day. It's the middle of, you know, it's sunshine. It's summer. But there's something so unreal about those. I'm going to say surreal, but to a tribe 10,000 years ago, freaking ominous.
Well, you it's subtle at first because you look up, like we pulled up to our spot or walked up there, you know, people were asking us like, yeah, we're trying to figure out where the moon is. And I'm like, I think I know where it is, but if these people don't know, then maybe I don't know where it is.
Yes.
And so I go pull up the sky app. I'm like, yeah, the moon's exactly where it should be. Like, where's that? I'm like, it's next to the sun. You know, it's not going to just fly across the sky. Like, oh, I got my cue. Better go. But you know, that as that eclipse starts, as it starts to partially occlude it more and more and more, it gets a little cooler and it happens slowly. So you don't notice it first and it's getting darker, but you're realizing that like before halfway through, you just look up there, you think the sun is still there and everything's fine. But you're like, wait, this feels like it's 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah. So when we hit the moment of totality and the nice thing is you got a comfortable hour or so to get ready for this moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just got more and more surreal. And then finally we hit that moment. Oh, by the way, that was my favorite part, was waking up in the morning. There were cirrus clouds all over the landscape and they were creating one of those ice halos, you know, one of those rainbow circles around the sun. It was almost as though we went on a tour de force of all the sky phenomenon we could ever hope to see. You know, we saw shooting stars, we saw the Milky Way, we saw constellations, we saw the ice halo, and then, you know, now it's time for the eclipse. As we got closer, we hit that moment of totality, and my 4-year-old, we were in the lake. I was holding her in the lake the moment we hit totality. And number one, it got dark, of course. Although because we had partly cloudy skies, it was sort of like sunset in all directions, right? But specifically, my 13-year-old started screaming, like, you know, with excitement, like, oh my God, it's totality, it's totality. But all my 4-year-old understood is that it was suddenly dark and people were screaming, we're in the water, this is not cool. pants. Our four-year-old starts crying. And so part of the sweet melange of memories I'll have will be my four-year-old losing her mind at that moment. It was pretty great.
So the reaction I've had in talking to other people who saw it was you're watching this, you're looking at it. I'm thinking, like, you know, I was like on the way up, like, if we get to like 90% or something, it'll be like, at least we went somewhere to go do it. I didn't know there was a difference.
Huge difference.
I had no idea, because I'm like, because you're watching it and you're watching the moon go in front, and I'm like, yeah, let's look for Baird's beads and that stuff. I'm watching the moon go further and further. I'm like, yeah, 95, 96. Like, this is really cool. Like, oh, it's just like a sliver. It's just like a fingernail. I mean, I'm like, this is cool. And I'm periscoping this, and I'm looking at Rudy and talking to this, and he's like, whoa. And then I look up and then I see it, and I'm like, oh.
So
that's what this is about.
You and I are fairly science-minded individuals, but the thing I was unprepared for is, if it's not a cloud and it's not a star, it's pretty much the size of either the sun or the moon in the sky. That's all we see, right?
Right.
The moment the moon occludes the sun, the only source of light is that corona around it, and it is very visible. What I was unprepared for, like emotionally unprepared for, is that corona means there's a new disk, and it is 4 to 5 times larger than the sun. You look up and you see something of a size that you have never experienced in your entire life. This is not how I felt, but I could understand how somebody would look up and think, holy crap, I'm looking at the face of God. It is like, that's the level. Like, it is spiritual. It is religion creating experience.
You understand that, like, for people to see it, that it's not like you just see, like, oh, that's like, I'll put a black disc in front of the sun. Everything changes. The photo we're looking at right now with the white, that is what you see. It is white. It is not orange. It is not red. It is white. It is this silver, this ring of white fire in the sky with these spectrally waving bands just moving away from it. It reminded me of Interstellar. It reminded me of, like, and the moon is so black. It's the blackest thing you've ever seen. It looks like a black hole in the sky.
Yeah.
Everything in the horizon is this glowing purplish horizon. Like, when you look at the sun setting, 360 degrees all the way around you. You felt like you're on an alien world.
Yeah. It was surreal and strange and wonderful. And I got to admit, I'm glad that totality was so long, because I don't know if I've told you this, Andrew. I only spent 20 or 30 seconds looking at it. The rest of all of my attention was looking at the kids and their experience. You know, like I wanted to register. The one thing I knew for sure is, like, years from now, I'm going to remember this experience, and I want to remember how, you know, what the family was like at this moment. It was awe-inspiring. In a world where nobody does hallucinogenic drugs, or they haven't been developed or whatever, it's straight up.
Salt Lake City, got it.
Yeah.
Rexburg, Idaho, got it.
It's straight up. It's straight up a hypnotic, dreamlike, almost religious experience.
Yeah, it was, as Rudy said, you know, we all of a sudden understood why people become eclipse chasers. Because remember, 18 months. Somewhere in the world, there's an eclipse, which often means you have to be out at sea or where have you to go see it. But every 18 months, you can see an eclipse, and there are people who go chase them around. And it is seeing this phenomenon. We're watching video right now of the eclipse, and it's just it's hard to understand, because we're used to astronomical photos, and we know those things are sort of doctored or enhanced or whatever. But the photos you've seen don't even do justice to what your eye picks up as far as just the how far out the sort of the coronal charges go, and the glow and everything else. It was just
well, and it's worth mentioning, you know, we've had infrared space telescopes looking at the sun for most of the adult life of most of the people listening right now. But it's like, you know, for the last 20 years or so. So we're familiar with intellectually what is happening on the sun. But this opportunity to viscerally look it in the face is utterly surreal, utterly intense, just incredible, just incredible.
I shared a I don't know if you saw yesterday's XKCD, but I sent it to Bryce, and it kind of sums it up, because you hear people all the time talk about like astronomical events.
Yeah. So you have how cool it sounds like it would be on the X-axis. The Y-axis is how cool it is to see it in person. And you got stuff like planetary conjunctions, supermoon, lunar eclipse, partial eclipse. And I'm sure like you could put like the transit of Venus and other stuff on there. And then at the all maximum the of both axes is total solar eclipse. And hot damn if that's not truly the case.
Yep. So, listen, sure a lot of people are out there sick of hearing us talk about this.
Well, but again, if anything, the good news, if you're listening in the United States, is that, you know, you got another, at bat here to see it next time it happens in 7 years, 2024, Worth it. A light, yep. Like, yep. I will never lose that image. I will never lose that frozen image in my mind, and I'm so thankful. I spent 5 days a week of 8-hour driving days, driving a freaking giant box 1,000 miles north. It's insane, but worth it.
Yeah, and I guess that's my point is, yeah, like, take our word for it. When you get the chance, go see it. It is, it's I don't know anybody who saw it who didn't go, it was even more than you could expect. So
yeah, it really was. I'm having a moment. sorry. I'm withdrawing right into myself to re-experience this moment.
Yeah. It's like when your girlfriend goes off to college and comes back and says, you know, just I'm a different person now. I've seen things. It's hard to really explain. And
man, the only thing that I can imagine that would be, you know, terrible about that is, you know, having a bunch of friends who experience that and you not.
Having a wife, you know, my entire social circle, having to cancel plans to go do the exact same thing. Like,
yeah,
that would suck.
I mean, if only you had a friend, who lived right in the path of totality for the next go around.
Oh, not after this, not after you did this to me.
You're like, I'm now anti-eclipses forever.
Oh, so what? So you can be like, yeah, it was cool, but it wasn't as good as the last one. Oh my God. I should have been there.
Fair enough.
So, speaking of cool phenomenon, hey, do you know what happened this week besides that?
Yeah. People went to patreon.com/weirdthing and helped support the podcast.
Mm-hmm. There's that. Totally that. I had a lot of fun hanging with Rudy, and I was thinking, man, we need to get the four of us and go do something. So I'm entertaining the idea of going off and investigating a Hellmouth. Well, so
okay, where is the Hellmouth?
I don't know. We got to find it, Bri.
we have to define it.
Think nature just hands you these mysteries? Says here's a Hellmouth.
Rudy,
well, there is one. I've been to one in Gainesville.
Well, say no more.
A reported Hellmouth. I went there with a then girlfriend, and we broke up within 48 hours. So you know, you never know.
So. For the record, Rudy Kobe does strike me as the kind of person that we would get along with famously to go investigate a haunted house. That deep in our guts of guts and our brains of brains, we know probably there's no ghost. But also, it's pretty great to be scared of
Brian,
ghosts.
He was roommates with and toured with Marilyn Manson. Like, touché. Yes, he's the perfect person to go experience the weird and macabre.
That'd be great. And you guys can make it possible if you go to patreon.com/weirdthings. Your donation may not feel like a lot to you, but know that it changes our lives and makes everything better.
Speaking of cool phenomenon, so something happened this week. Something happened yesterday. And did anybody notice or care?
We came home from the eclipse.
Is it the launch of Elon's new fashion line?
Peripherally related to that, SpaceX landed another rocket.
Dude, how great is it that we don't even notice that anymore? Like, it's as though you're saying an airplane safely landed at an airport.
They're at 12 this year, 12, and it's still August, and they're ahead of the Russians in rocket launches, orbital launches. They are fast becoming the highest volume rocket launch provider there is. But Justin pointed out they unveiled the flight suit. Now understand, when you go into space, there's a couple different kinds of spacesuits you wear. There's a suit you'd wear for an EVA that's got a lot of thermal protection and radiation protection, all this other stuff. There's suits that you might wear if you're exploring the surface of the moon or maybe Mars. And then there's the flight suit, which is what you wear when you're going from, you know, Earth to orbit or to a space station. When in case you have some sort of problem with, let's say, a leak in the hull, it provides oxygen and it's a pressure suit. So it can help you in a depressurized environment. You can work with that. So SpaceX released the first, I want to take a look. Show the Boeing flight suit. If you could do that, Bryce. Look at Boeing space
suit. Shots fired. You hear us, Boeing people? You about
just
to
saying,
get taken
just
down?
Saying, it's kind of an exciting time we live in where it's not just NASA making
audio things. Listeners, just imagine you're looking at a 1977 leisure suit. Just picture something hideous and cringeworthy.
Boeing people be spacesuiting like this.
No, it's not. It's functional. It's practical. It's what, you know, we have two programs right now to ferry crews to the International Space Station. Boeing has one. You just don't want to show the back because it's got like the big wide butt. Boeing's going to be doing that.
It does look like if you remember the spacesuits from the 1980s comedy Amazon Women on the Moon.
We all do.
You know what? You don't? Oh, so good. That was so good. That and Kentucky Fried Movie. They were great. Anyway, it looks very traditionally 1950s sci-fi projection.
And that is like the best view of that, by the way. The best view of that suit. In that chair, they show in that shot, we see him sitting in the chair. The chair is literally made of duct tape.
Wait, what?
Look at the chair.
Oh my God, it is. That's amazing.
Now let's see the SpaceX spacesuit. Have you seen this yet?
I've not yet seen this, but I'm going to imagine that it's an Iron Man suit. I'm going to hope it'll be as close to Iron Man as we can get. Holy shit, it is. Sorry, I cursed. Wow. That's straight out of Mass Effect.
Yeah, Elon Musk had SpaceX actually hire a guy who worked on the Iron Man suit to help design this.
That's amazing. That is awesome.
So in other Elon Musk news, remember how we talked about, hey, I want to dig a tunnel. And they're like, yeah, you're crazy if you think you're going to be able to dig a tunnel. I got permission. Doesn't matter. You got permission. Blah, blah, blah. Elon Musk has permission from the city of Hawthorne, which is where SpaceX is located, to dig a 2-mile tunnel under California.
Wow. 44 feet underground, a 2-mile tunnel.
Yep.
Man.
The theory is that you're that 44 feet down, that far down, you ain't going to feel nothing on the surface. As Elon Musk says, if you think you can feel something on the surface, the Israelis would love to buy that technology from you. because of the, the agreement is if there's any more than like a half of inch movement of Earth or whatever, they'll stop it. But they've got tentative approval from the city of Hawthorne to do this with his, quote, boring company to do this. So they want to dig a 2-mile tunnel and see how well that works. Now, kind of rad. That was the thing that cracked me up was last time I went to go visit. I parked in the parking lot, as one does, and there's SpaceX. There's this giant rocket, and you turn around, and the people I'm with, like, hey, see this? And they look at this fence, and there's this like big hole in the ground. Like, yeah, I'm like, this is the hole. This is the hole that he's digging for the boring company, you know. It's kind of like he's got projects all over the place. So kind of cool news.
Yeah, man. But. Dude, I don't know. We've sung the praises of Elon Musk. Just assume we're singing them again.
Yeah. Oh boy. What time is it?
feels like, I don't know, 6 o'clock.
What time is it? It's Journey Quest.
Oh, my God. That's amazing, Alexa.
Yeah, that's right. Alexa's new voice says it's Journey Quest time.
Heck yeah. Do we have a recap on the story thus far?
Yeah, here, let's find out.
Previously on
Journey Quest!
This is classic best world reveal. I think we're going to get a brand new OS update. I think it's going to be downloaded instantly to everyone, and we get to get the inside skinny.
Best World Corporation bringing you the best in robot on robot entertainment.
An OS, a government, a communicator. Yes.
Wait, hold on, hold on.
One thing.
So our intrepid explorers who were journeying across the wasteland of post-apocalyptic America trying to find their good buddy Andrew Main and other friends found themselves very, very, very lost in a very changed environment filled with dinosaurs, animals that are a little bit rapey. And Justin found himself in what may or may not be a theme park that he first thought was just like a Westworld ripoff. But no, thank you. That's not what it was. This is Bestworld, a theme park for robots.
Yeah.
By robots.
And I have now masked myself by impersonating somebody from the home office of Bestworld and offered them the update they so richly deserve. If only I can reunite with Brian Brushwood.
All right. And you were about to, I think, point to somebody else to come out and speak, if I remember correctly.
Well, and specifically, last time we saw me, I was riding. I got abandoned by my Judas of a T-Rex. Unbelievable treachery. And I was hopping on other dinosaurs in the middle of a game of Ugg, right?
Yeah, epic game of Ugg, causing panic.
Brian, you were crying loudly in the center of the arena while everybody else chanted mocking jeers at you.
Okay, look, we're not in the game yet. We're just setting things up.
I'm just trying to explain to everybody. I'm rewarding long-term listeners by accurately portraying what was happening.
It's fine. Fine. I was crying. I was very upset. I felt abandoned and alone. I thought Justin would be there for me, but guess what? He wasn't. And I thought a T-Rex...
You were supposed to come out for me. I wasn't supposed to come back in for you. I left there so you would meet me out.
Well, I'm working on it, okay? That's all I gotta say.
So... Brian is, where were you in the middle of the field? What was it specifically? Were you still sobbing?
Yeah. I tried to hop on a Stegosaurus and an Ankylosaur and all that stuff, and nobody was having me, and it just wasn't working. I couldn't find a dinosaur that was a match for me. Standing there alone in this giant arena in the middle of combat with my right arm severed. You guys don't understand how tough it is when you lose your right hand and have a chainsaw for a hand. Do you guys know? Do you have a chainsaw for a hand, Andrew?
Wow, that was like a big horn. What was this? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the intermission. We have some new players we're throwing out on the field. We're going to make this a little bit more disruptive right now, but first a moment of silence for the T-Rex that plummeted to her death over the edge of the stadium. Okay, now we're back into the game, and direct your attention to the third fairway where the quarter's about to open, and we have some new players on the field. Are you ready?
I throw my chainsaw-encrusted right hand up into the sky and rev it, hopefully, so the audience will cheer for me.
Yeah, the audience is not cheering for former team captain Brian Brushwood. His entire fans and team have abandoned him, and he's by himself standing on a dung heap in the middle of the Ugg field crying.
In protest, I take off my pants.
Yes. Adding to the confusion and whatnot, he has now taken off his pants. And he is still just as pathetic as ever. And I didn't realize it was that cold out here. But anyhow, will he have a chance for a new pairing? Will he have a chance to perhaps find a new mount? We'll see. when the garage door, the massive doors, dramatically raise up. Fog starts to drift underneath.
As the fog drifts and the garage door begins to open, I scan the horizon to see if there's any cover I can, like, are there any trees I can hide behind?
There are trees, Brian.
Okay, great. I go behind a tree and maybe
filled with flying tree snakes.
I go up anyway, and I'm like, look, I speak to the tree snakes as I climb. I'm like, hey guys, I don't like you. You don't like me.
Welcome, miss. Sir,
I have a chainsaw.
Explore your ass.
So I climb up a tree and I look at them with my left hand, which still has two fingers. I do eyes looking at me, looking at you, like I'm watching you. And then I hold up the chainsaw and I mime that I will cut off the branch if they come at me. And then I with my left hand, which still has fingers, I go left, right, left, right, left, right with my pointed finger. Like, don't you dare. No, 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 yeah. No.
The snakes bit you in the Johnson. It's swollen and you're taking pride of that fact for the moment. Meanwhile, a bank of fog rolls across and things are moving through the fog. The new mounts, the new steeds, the new whatever, the new entrance. And all of a sudden, the larger dinosaurs start to tremble a little bit. They're scared. They're not sure how to react. This fog bank's covered everything. The fog encroaches to the base of the tree.
I lean over to the snakes, and I'm like, look, I know you can't talk, but you guys have seen some stuff, I'm guessing. Like, is this, should I be worried? And I look into the eyes of the snakes.
And we will give you all the answers you want as soon as you let us bite your penis.
They're like, well, one of them already did, and I thank him for
You know, one good turn deserves another.
Hold on, wait. Well, what do you got for me, snake? Yeah, is it worth getting bit?
Only one way to find out, Brian.
Okay, I use my chainsaw arm to saw off the limb and drop it down, and I turn to the other snakes. I'm like, any of you other ones have some thoughts?
Sure. Can we bite your penis?
I start just pruning the shit out of this tree.
So, Brian, now you're holding on
like
to one
that,
limb.
You stupid tease.
Brian is on the last limb there, and he may be snake free finally. Maybe snake free finally at last. But the fog bank is starting to raise up a little bit higher, and he can hear the sound of something large rumbling by the base of the tree.
Okay, so I shout out and I say, who goes?
More rumbling, and you. Tree starts to tremble a bit.
Okay, so I lean over. I'm like, I'm sorry. When I said who goes, that was a bit dramatic. But what I mainly wanted to know is who is below me. If it's a creature, maybe we can team up and take on the man. Do you like taking on the man, creature?
Creature? Who checked his text message?
Creature, you didn't happen to miss the eclipse, did you? I would imagine that would make you quite irascible.
Why, yes. I do like not just taking on the man. I like taking on many men.
Oh my God, are you the molesting sloth?
It appears as if my reputation precedes me. Pleasure to make your acquaintance, Enchanté.
I look to the camera and put my arms out akimbo as if to say, it's a living, and then I jump on the molesting sloth.
Well, this is a real turn of events.
All right, listen.
To come back to my place for some pizza rolls?
Yeah, man, it's going to be great. But for now, I need you to take me over so I can kill those dinosaurs.
No way. We're leaving now.
You need to escape. Okay, well, I guess I'll take escape as a second place trophy.
How fast does the sloth go?
with or without his van in the parking lot.
Oh no, yeah. We're just gonna take the exit. All right, the sloth leaves to his van.
With my free time, I look for ticks and mites on the sloth in the hopes that I will somehow create a kinship that will make him appreciate and respect me.
Wow. You're real delicate with that. The sloth reaches his arm up to start slowly tussling Brian's hair.
I slap his arm away. I slap his arm away with my one still good hand.
Oh, playing hard to get, huh?
I slap the sloth's butt and be like, get going, go.
Oh, don't worry. There'll be plenty of that. we get to the sloth's van. The sloth sits in the driver's seat, and Brian, where do you sit?
I sit directly behind the sloth, and I say, drive.
Oh, so, no can do, Brian. Only passengers in my van sit up front.
I resign myself to the reality that I'm going to have to sit up front. And so I get in the front seat, and I rev the engine right there in the van.
Before you do, the sloth slowly starts patting the seat that you're going to sit in, and then instead of moving his hand, he just turns it upward.
I sit and tolerate his fondle hand, and I'm like, let's go! Yo!
Wow, I thought the last guy I met was permissive.
Sloth is maybe a little bit turned off by this, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Like hard to get? You'll get harder to get if you go.
Well, now immediately I'm re-energized. The sloth drives to his tree fork.
Well, there's some traffic. But you see, he's like, oh, there's a special event here next to the stadium. Best World is doing another one of its releases of its software or whatever.
I say, hey, real quick, how full is the gray water tank? Because, you know, I've driven a few RVs before, and, you know, I want to go pee in the sink.
He points to a Mr. Big Gulp cup in the back.
Okay, all right. Well, and I was like, look, man, if we're stuck here, I'm going to get out. I'm going to see what's going on at this event. So I real quick, before he can respond, open the door, hop out, and start running to whatever the center of attention is here.
Hey, wait.
I run as fast as I can, and I don't hear him towards the center of the presentation.
Whatever, slut.
I take a moment, and I turn around, and I was like, no shaming, shame on you, shamer. And then I keep going.
So you make your way into an auditorium, a humongous auditorium, and who do you see up on stage? Justin Robert Young.
I look with rapt attention at Justin Robert Young, and I listen intently to what he says, all the while swimming upstream like a salmon ready to spawn, trying to get close to the stage.
He's about to do a tech demo for the latest update to the Best World software. He's made a lot of promises and says behind the curtain he has a very special guest.
I nudge the person next to me, and I'm like, That's my friend! That's my friend.
Okay.
That's my friend. Yes. Right, he's on stage.
And Justin is stalling for time. He's trying to figure out. He's looking to see the monitor, who the special guest could be. And the lights go dim, right? A little bit of fog starts to trail. And Brian's got a little bit of, you know, a little traumatic, you know, recall of what just happened the last time he saw fog and who was there waiting for him.
But along my way, I lean over and I sniff the hair of some young woman near me.
It smells like nylon.
Okay. I keep going.
And she does turn around and say, back up, sloth.
Yeah.
And I, pretending to be a sloth, I say, I'm sorry.
And then somebody else pops up with a camera because they've been live streaming. I'm like, this man just sexually harassed this woman.
I'm still pretending to be a sloth. I say, I didn't harass anyone.
Now he's making fun of sloths. All of a sudden, all sorts of other people stand up and pull out their camera phones and start making video.
I fire up the chainsaw and I start chopping off hands that are holding phones.
Oh God. Oh my God. Sparks fly when the hands flap. This man is abusing robo people.
Wait, I realize that I'm surrounded by robots, and I say, are you all robots?
Like, you know, where's the borderline for you? You've got a mechanical hand.
I just start slaughtering everyone. I'm swinging left and right, just chopping everything to bits in a giant ass circle. And I say, goddamn, I want these goddamn robots out of my goddamn fantasy park.
Well, Justin can't help but notice the commotion at the back. All he hears is the sound of a chainsaw and the screams of people, as far as he knows, people screaming as heads are rolling and hands are being decapitated left and right.
I stand up and I say, oh, my God, what a horrifying event. Best World Security, please tranquilize, but don't kill this man. I'll save him for me later.
I look up. I shout loudly, Justin, it's me. It's Brian. It's Brian. You remember me, Brian? I lost my hand. I have a chainsaw now. And then I slaughter a few more robots.
Look at that delusional asshole. I have no idea who he is. Best World Security, please tranquilize him.
I say, Justin, I don't understand what you're talking about. We adventured through time and space. We're from another dimension. And then I chop off the head of what appears to be a 23-year-old sorority girl.
See, clearly delusional. Best World Security, please. Security! We need security out here right now. We're taking big losses on our hosts.
All right, so I run as fast as I can, as far as I can, up to the stage so I could join them.
Oh, my God. Security. Andrew, where's my security?
You're like,
they were
Justin.
Decapitated. Says a head rolling across the ground.
Justin! Justin, we got to get out of here. Justin!
Brian gets close enough to the point where now it's just he's facing me, and I just tell him, Brian, Wild West stunt spectacular. And then I point at him right in the face, and I say, your reign of terror here is over, varmint. And I stage punch him. And what do you do?
Realizing instantly that we have a show to put on, I react. I sell the punch. To the amazement of the crowd, I hope. I sell the punch and fall back on my back, jumping up and landing square on my back solar plexus, whatever that's called. And I writhe in pain, hoping for it to, and I gauge the audience's reaction.
I give him a few more fake punches on the ground, and then I say, all right, I'm going to take this guy back to my office and show him some real best world justice.
And so I stand up and I said, oh, nice try. But do these people know that you hate robots? And I play a tape. I play a tape of what sounds like a recorded private conversation of the two of us. And it sounds like you're saying some very unkind things about robots.
Now, everybody can't help but notice Brian is holding up to the microphone his hand, pretending he's holding a tape recorder, and he's making the noises and sounds himself.
Yes, exactly.
I'm Justin Robert Young, and I hate robots. I hate robots.
Want to hear that again?
I hate robots.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
I fake punch him. In fact, this time I just keep fake punching him so he can't say anything else because he's reacting to the fake punches until
I'm selling all of the punches, and at some point I say, you're doing really good, Justin. It's almost as though you really want to beat the crap out of me.
Hopefully we're out of mic range at that point, and we are now off stage.
We've rolled off stage into the craft services table, spills everywhere. People are shrieking and running away as fast as they can. And then you hear beep, 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 beep. Sound of a motorcycle. Races across the stage, and there is a motorcyclist with a helmet on, with a sidecar, and motions for you to get inside, both of you, on back and in the sidecar.
I squint pointedly and try to figure out who that motorcyclist is.
They're wearing a helmet.
Mm.
Brian, we don't have any choice. Get in the sidecar.
I turn around and I say, "It was all an act, you dumb robots." And then I hop in the sidecar.
All right, I hop in the sidecar too.
All right, one of you could have hopped in the back of the motorcycle.
We,
both of you could be in the sidecar.
We fight
really
over
cozy.
The sidecar.
Motorcycle starts to turn around, go drive down the ramp right through the crowd. And he flips up his visor. And who is it? None other than... It's next time on Journey Quest.
Damn.
Gentlemen, do we have any picks?
Yeah, I do. I actually do have a pick. I wonder if Justin has encountered this.
The solar eclipse?
It's called the solar eclipse. If you have the means.
Is that like the solar plexus, but in the back?
No, on the trip up, I was getting caught up on podcasts, and I went to listen to 99% Invisible, and they ended up rebroadcasting an ESPN 30 for 30 podcast that was just extraordinary. It was so good. The first episode is about the Reebok advertising campaign for Dan and Dave in Barcelona in 1992. And
I like to call it wah, wah.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, like you'll feel it listening to that whole thing. Like it was listening to that story. I'm not going to say when, but there was a moment that as I'm driving, both of my hands left the wheel and they grabbed my head in terror and frustration. Like that's how into the story I was. I enjoyed it so much that I ended up listening to a second story that is about a, I guess essentially a casino heist is the way it's portrayed, although it's up to you to decide if that's what it was or not. It was utterly fantastic. The 30 for 30 podcasts, I listened to two, and they were both extraordinary.
Yeah, excellent. I have not listened to them yet, but you know, anything that the 30 for 30 brand has done is really good, and podcast is such a natural area for them to go into. That Dan and Dave story is just crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, and especially because it was mainly focused, like I knew it because I remember that ad campaign, and to get it from the perspective of the people who were in the middle of that storm and the people who experienced the parts that didn't work out according to plan, and to see the stark contrast of how things might have gone versus how they did, and what happens to the human individuals caught in the middle of that was utterly extraordinary. I cannot say enough about it. It was so good. I listened to the Dan and Dave one myself, and then I you know, pitched to the family. I'm like, "Hey, can we listen to this again? Only you guys listen to it." And I immediately listened to it again. It was great. It was great.
Oh, wow. Wow.
My pick is, and I think Andrew, did both of you guys watch it or just Andrew, the Founder?
Oh, so good. So good.
A Keaton movie.
Yeah, sir. Michael Keaton is, if you were afraid that Michael Keaton had suddenly stopped being an excellent actor, just watch The Founder so that you can lay those fears to rest.
You know, I got some feelings about the movie, because
yes.
Michael Keaton is amazing. There's no question about that. I love the you know, the rest of the cast of The Office that's in it. But there, to me, the second half of the movie really I don't want to say falls apart, because I don't think it ever really does anything that's incompetent, but it does ultimately feel incongruous to the point where I don't know whether or not the movie knows how they feel about Ray Kroc.
I agree. I agree.
And the first half of it is very much, I think, this story of, hey, look, everybody kind of needed everybody on some level, and Ray Kroc was necessary to take McDonald's from a thing, a little thing, to the gigantic American institution that it is. And the vision in which Ray Kroc has from the earliest, his earliest involvement, turns out to be the reality that we know of it today. But from the point where, and we're going to get into some light spoilers, so where you get into Ray Kroc's personal life and specifically his marriage, and then of course when everything dissolves, like, I never really got a full sense of where the movie was telling me to go emotionally, and I don't, nor do I think it was like an obtuse enough movie where I was supposed to just be constantly making my own choices on everything. So very well worth watching. I'm not up enough on the reality of things to know exactly how many corners they cut to make a coherent narrative, but it doesn't seem like anything would be extraordinarily out of pocket fact-wise, or at least, you know, at a cursory glance, but very much worth watching if just for Michael Keaton. And ultimately, I think it's a movie that if it were 20% better, it could have been an Oscar. Like,
agreed.
Made a movie.
Yeah, I think I thought Keaton's performance was great. I was glad to see them at least address the subject, but that was my problem, was that there was not a, you know, how do we feel about Ray Kroc kind of thing. We didn't have enough about his background. This guy sort of arrives fully formed in his 50s, and, you know, we get this story about this event, and then things kind of quickly progress through there. I read Ray Kroc's biography years ago when I went through a period, like, I spent a year reading every biography I could. And in this book and this movie, rather, like, you know, he had multiple marriages over this period of time. So it's not like we're getting an accurate depiction of what home life was like. And there was, you know, with the brothers, there certainly was a frustration with him, but there was certainly a reconciliation between, you know, one of the surviving brothers and McDonald's. You know, he served the 3 billionth hamburger, et cetera. It was a more complicated relationship and a more complicated situation that was presented. So I was kind of left going, well, who is Ray Kroc? You know, yeah. Is this a guy that had this opportunity and that's what he did? He finally said, I'm going to do everything I can. I still was sort of, it was just as much of a mystery the first 5 minutes into the movie, that's the guy that's there at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but I feel like in a very simplified way, they told an essential truth that most people are not aware of, which is that McDonald's essentially was a company that emerged despite its actual founders, not because of them. You know what I mean? Like everything I've read has indicated that the McDonald brothers were, like, they were doing their thing, and Ray Kroc was the one that wanted to institutionalize everything and take it to the next level. And in that regard, I thought they did a good job of at least depicting a sensible and understandable way that might have happened.
I really agree with you. Up until the point where what I feel where the disconnect started to come in was as soon as everything becomes wildly successful, you never see any kind of emotional change from the brothers. You know, they're always they're literally the same characters the entire movie. They're just in the McDonald's, getting into phone calls with Ray Kroc, and that's kind of that, right? And you never get a sense that, like, oh, okay, cool. Look, this is going well. This is succeeding. Ray Kroc's always going to be a real son of a bee to deal with, but at least look at this. He did what he initially promised us to do, and then we could get into these second level things. I guess, Andrew, you're right. It never really escalated for me to the point where, at the point that the characters need to start making decisions that we are uncomfortable with, it didn't seem like a big, complicated situation. It just seemed like, all right, it's a frog and a scorpion story. And the guy we kind of knew was the scorpion at the beginning stings the frog at the end.
Yeah, I, you know, my, you know, my kind of issue is just sort of like, you know, that you, I don't know, like that we get, you know, when it comes to wives, we get an Ethel, but then there was a couple other characters. I mean, they remarried multiple times. You know, they were like, there was the one wife had been with him for 30 years, 40 years or whatever. And then the next wife and that. So I don't know who's really who or who's just a composite. And I have a problem sometimes. I understand you have to create composites sometimes. But when it comes to biographical stuff, when they're really close to the person, it's like they'll do the story of a character. Then you realize like, oh, no, they had three kids, not the one kid here. They had this. And that sometimes that makes a difference. And it comes from it's what you do in fiction to streamline your story because you don't want to deal with that complication. But when that's a real part of their life, but it's not convenient to the story you want to tell, it's like, what story are you telling? It's my frustration with the Steve Jobs movie. It's like, it's not about Steve Jobs. They took the name of Steve Jobs and made their own movie about a guy with his name, but it's so different biographically than who he was or what he was that you're like, what am I watching?
Yeah. As you know? An artistic consumer, you have a reasonable expectation going in that it's like, I'm going to feel like I'm peeking into the actual life of this person. And then as you figure out like, in no way is this their actual life, that breaks the illusion for you.
Yeah. You have to make choices. But when those choices are made because this is the story I want to, I'm going to do the Brian Brushwood story.
Right.
No, he would lock himself away in a podcast studio away from his family, children crying at the door.
Yeah, it's like the scene is scene one is like the eclipse is happening. He's ignoring his crying 4-year old daughter so that he can take video of the other children.
and you know, compare that to like The Master, right? Which is very obviously based on L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology, but they told their own story, and obviously Paul Thomas Anderson took, you know, licenses with that story and told things that were out of order or fictionalized, but it was still a great movie that may have told an essential truth about Scientology and the people around L. Ron Hubbard at that time.
Yeah, you got an idea of the charisma, you got an idea of the volatility, and you were able to sidestep certain things where you could, you know, and I think that's a thing is like I felt I knew more about more of what I saw in The Master reconciled with what I'd heard about Hubbard than the founder with Ray. And I'm saying, I think probably was a very good version of that guy, but it just, he was the same guy at the end of the movie he was at the beginning.
Well, and that's the thing is by the end of it, when you're the Ray Kroc in the final 15 minutes, who is doing things that are kind of objectively villainous or slimy, seemed, you know, out of pocket from the guy that we had met throughout the movie, who certainly was guilty of being overambitious, maybe, and would oftentimes maybe step on elements of his life because of his ambition, but, you know, was either doing things for a greater good in a way that continued to pan out, or would at least be cognizant of the things that he was doing. And by the end of it, it's like, oh, wait, were we just rooting for like a monster to do monstrous things? Like, how should we feel about eating a hamburger?
I thought they did an okay job of like to me, I felt like they were placing us in the uncomfortable middle where it's like, it's very clear watching The Founder that Ray Kroc brought something to the table that flat out would not have existed if it weren't for Ray Kroc. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, you know, you cheer for him. It's like, yes, no, the brothers are dumb. They have small, short-sighted vision. You should be thinking how to institutionalize this and make it bigger than it is. But I do agree that, you know, he's not the most lovable protagonist I've ever seen.
Well, he's supposed to be complicated. It's just the final 15 minutes where it just, you know, there is none of that moral complication of, well, we need to do this. Like even the big break with the brothers is kind of set up by this financial squeeze that Ray Kroc is under. And now he feels that this has become an us versus them thing and kind of goes into shark mode in a way that you can at least understand, whether or not you think he's right. You can understand where his motivations are. Whereas, but you know, the decisions he's making toward the end just seem like just out and out villainy with little compunction.
My pick isn't so much a pick as much as just a, hey, this is kind of cool.
It's the eclipse.
War cry. Ryan,
that was going to be my pick. Why did you have to steal it?
Sorry.
You know, across the street, there's a supermarket from me, and I walk in and out of there. And at some point, I don't know when, they put in a DVD Express, not a Red Box, but a DVD Express. You could be confused for thinking it's a Red Box, because it's giant, it's red, it rents DVDs. And they even have a thing that says there, like, hey, don't put Red Box DVDs in here. But you know what? Like, in the age of streaming and iTunes and Amazon Prime and all that, I kind of forgot, like, hey, you know, sometimes there's a movie you want to see, but you're on the fence with. Just go get it there. You know, it's like $1.50 a night for regular DVD or $2 for Blu-ray, whatever. And so I've been watching a bunch of movies because I go to that store every day, pick something up, watch it. So, you know, look around you. You might find there is, you know, again, same. You could use Redbox or whatever you want to, but, you know, like, I didn't see Alien Covenant in the theater. I'm like, oh, they have it. They have this, whatever. So that's my pick as a reminder. Like, hey, sometimes you want to see something, it's right there.
Is it
so.
How much of your enjoyment is fueled by nostalgia for the blockbuster days?
I don't know. I mean, I theater going is not what it used to be. Although I signed up for MoviePass, so we'll see how that works out.
Holy cow! Please tell me all about that, because that's something I understand in the abstract, but I don't know anybody who's boots on the ground.
I don't know. I haven't got it yet, but we'll talk. We can talk about it on after things. But anyhow, my recommendation is it's cool because it's just another way to sort of see something with. Because as you cord cut, like, hey, I'm going to remind you, there are these wonderful – the innovation of putting a entire DVD store inside of a vending machine was brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. And it's still around, still thrives. And if you want to catch up with something, it's a great way to do it. So, gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.